G'day and welcome back to another episode of Bush Yarns. I'm Scotty Connell from Kimberley Spirit, and I'm stoked to be able to bring you some more yarns from out bush up here in the Kimberley, northwestern Australia. Let's get into it. G'day and welcome back to another episode of Bush Yarns. I'm Scotty Connell and it's my pleasure to be sitting here alongside good friend, good mate Ben Broughty. How you going, mate?
I am bloody terrific, Scotty. And as we get going again, we've tried, this is round two of us trying to start the potty. We are sitting here on my back porch and we are currently here in the Kimberley experiencing a beautiful tropical low. It's the monsoon time of year where we get our tropical lows, which brings beautiful weather for us, widespread drizzling rain, and it's what we really live for at this time of year. Well, for the whole year, this is what dreams are made of, is being here at this time of year. Like, the dry season is dry, beautiful, it's temperate, the weather is nice, it's comfortable, great for camping. Then we move into the build-up through probably late September, definitely you'd say maybe more mid-October till about Christmas time is our build-up weather, where it's brutally hot, like it's almost unbearable. But the nice thing about that is that all our wonderful visitors leave and we get the Kimberley back to ourselves. And then the ultimate time of year is this time of year, Christmas, the Christmas holidays, when it's very quiet around town, the weather is absolutely stunning. I was just looking just then, it's 28 degrees in Kununurra right now, which is the same temperature as Melbourne. It's a degree cooler than Perth. So it's very, very glorious up in Kununurra at the moment. But thanks for having me back, buddy. I'm sure we've got lots of good things to talk about. For the folks listening also, you might hear some white noise in the background. This is a Bush Yarns podcast. It is raining, and that is the sound of glorious rain on a tin roof. So that's the white noise you can hear in the background. And if it gets too hectic, we might just pause for a second and let it pass and get going again.
Absolutely. I love it. And what we're looking at from back veranda here is the Lower Ord River, and it's nice and brown.
It is nice and brown. I've only been a resident on River Farm for 3 years, and River Farm, as you say, runs along the Lower Ord. And the reason it's brown at the moment, I flew in from Darwin 2 days ago, and there's a junction below the diversion dam where Lake Kununurra turns into the Ord River, where the Ord River meets the Dunham, and the Dunham is currently flowing quite well. And the Dunham River comes in from the sort of Dundoon area, and that's all those waterfalls are flowing at the moment, so that's why the Dunham is flowing, and that's what turns this little river out the back here brown. And I know that people, the residents on River Farm, they froth when they see it turn that colour. All the water in the tap starts turning brown. it's awesome.
Yeah, it's a magic time of year, and that really only happened about a week ago, having that that brown change come in. Just noticed it when we crossed over the bridge there, and it was all looking beautiful. And that's after a good few months of really cooking 40 plus degree days. So we really, the build up this year was a scorcher, and everyone across the board felt it. Speaking to a mechanic this morning, he said it was definitely the hottest. And he said also a friend up in Darwin said it was the hottest build up that they had endured before. So really nice to have this weather finally kick in. It's a bit of a treat, to say the least. It's all a bit la-la-ish, really, isn't it?
This is the reward, this type of weather, after persevering through the build-up. I have just spent the build-up, on the North Kimberley coast, up at the Kimberley Coastal Camp. We spoke about my experiences last time we sat down, Scotty.
And that's what this prompted this catch-up, was seeing you rock back into town after a month in the bush solo.
I'm fresh back off the boat.
To hear what's happening.
You could say.
Yeah.
And I guess the different thing about the build up on the coast is that the hotter it gets inland on those scorching red kimberly rocks is the harder the sea breeze blows in up on that part of the world, up on the North Kimberley coast. So from about 9 o'clock in the morning till about lunchtime, so it's 3 hours where it's dead still, sitting there under what they call the big house, the main living area up on the camp. The coastal camp I refer to as the camp, so when I say the camp, that's what I'm talking about. Sitting there, just no wind, bucketing sweat, it was pretty horrible actually. But it's for 3 hours of the day, and then just as that little bit of wind kicked up there, it's the same thing out the coast. We just had a little bit of wind kick up here as we're chatting away. It's the same thing out there. At about lunchtime, the sea breeze will start, and then by 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's blowing 30 knots, and it's a cool wind off the ocean. It's hydro-cooled, but it's also, the air is being pushed from high up in the atmosphere down to the ocean, then along the ocean, till it hits the coast. And by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it is absolutely stunning. It's like 26 degrees, 27 degrees. It's every afternoon out there is beautiful. And I flew from the coastal camp to Darwin, and as is a common topic of weather, when you go to a grocery store or you buy a drink or something, everyone's like, how nice is this weather? Because when I arrived in Darwin, it was exactly like this, monsoonal raining. So everyone was just feeling that relief. Yeah. And I got the impression that it had been unbearable, like you were just saying.
Yeah, for a long time.
Yeah.
It was a pressure cooker, and you just have to pace yourself through it.
Yeah.
You sort of have all these plans to get so many things done, and it just doesn't happen. You just got to put some things on the back burner and just step it out.
I find also that hot weather sits you on your bum. You are going from aircon to aircon, from the aircon in the house to the aircon in the car, to someone's other house or to the gym. We live in the aircon at that time of year. It's very unpleasant. Also, the other thing about the East Kimberley at that time of year, the landscape looks pretty flogged out and horrid. It hasn't experienced rain for about 9 months. All the grass has either burnt or fallen over. All the trees are just hanging in there. Everything just seems like it's just hanging on for grim life for this sort of weather, for those first rains to come, which is when we look out now at the back here to the lower Ord. Everything's just luscious green. The boabs are just going, yes, everything. We've even got some little birds flying around here, like they're loving it as well.
Yeah, just in their absolute element. And the boab flowers, we've got any out there?
No, I think it's not really flowered late last year.
Yeah.
But anyway, mate.
Yeah, tell us about the coastal camp. Yeah. We want to hear all about it. You've been out there for a month. Have you got back this week?
I've been out there for 4 weeks. I went out on the 15th of December. This time, I've driven. So you can't actually drive to the coastal camp. You can drive to a place called Walsh Point down on Port Warrender, which is about 38 kilometres past the Mitchell Plateau. So that's a 9-hour drive up the Gibb River to the Mitchell Plateau, and another 2-hour drive to do the 38 Ks down to Walsh Point at Port Warrender. So I've done that, flown in a light aircraft to the Mitchell Plateau, choppered down, float plane out of Kununurra straight to the camp. And the ultimate way is the Mallard, which is the flying boat out of Darwin to the camp. But I'd never boated around. So this year, Tub and Jules had ordered a barge, which went out there on the 15th of December. So I was offered either to fly or go on the barge, and I was like, oh, 100% I'm going on the barge. The boys call it, it's called the barge. with the boys, it's a three-day sail from Wyndham around the coast, and it was amazing. I'd never seen a place called Cape Londonderry. Have you been to Londonderry a couple of times?
Yeah, around there a few times.
I'd never been to Londonderry. Heard the legend of, for you guys listening, Londonderry has a reputation for being some of the roughest waters in the Kimberley. It's the, from what I can gather, it's the convergence of two tides, which makes it very rough. But when we went around it, I've actually got some video footage of it, it was dead flat. But what was awesome about that, my first time seeing it being dead flat, was you could just see all these massive swirls and swells in the water. So you could see that in the water, and what was going underneath was very rough, but the actual surface was smooth. There wasn't any waves. So it was good, really, really good to see why Londonderry has that reputation. It's because of the convergence of those two tides.
A lot of skippers call it Cape Laundry.
Cape Laundry. But anyway, that was really cool going around on the barge. And folks.
You didn't go into Drysdale, did you? You just went straight across, straight over Clumberoo.
Yeah, the boys just pin it. They go day and night, so they're on a 4-hour shift. And it was, I mean, it's really my brother was actually on there as well, so it was really cool to hang out with my brother Kale and Rossi, a guy I went to school with. So these are guys that I've known for a very long time, and the other guy on there, he's actually dating my cousin over in Wyndham.
Cool sunrises and sunsets.
Unbelievable sunrises and sunsets. And then, you know, when you punch up the coast and you get into that crazy blue water, Wyndham is typically a brown water, but once you get like 2 days, I guess it took us to get up to Faraway Bay. You know, when you're sailing past what's the island? Lejeune.
Yeah.
Like the colour of the water is amazing, and it stays like that all the way until you get around to the Kimberley coast and to the coastal camp, and then it turns into that turquoisey bluey water, and then when you arrive at the camp in the Admiralty Gulf, it actually can be very brown in there as well. That water changes with the tide cycle, so on the springs. With the full and new moon, it can be Wyndham brown, and then on the neaps, and especially 3 or 4 days after the neaps, it's crystal clear blue water, or that turquoisey aqua crazy colour. I've actually got some beautiful photos.
Did you see any marine life on the way out? Or like out there, did you see, was there any dolphins?
It's a great question, because the boys do see them all the time, but no, we didn't see any dolphins this time.
Yep.
I saw plenty of dolphins, the little snubfin dolphins, when I was up the camp on my own out in the tinny.
Yeah.
I actually chased them around one day, not chasing them, but I was following them around the Gulf as they moved.
Yeah, nice.
But,
When you get in up there, you come in on a high tide and you can pull it up on the beach and sort out what you've got to sort out.
Yeah. So they time the barge runs on the spring tide. So yes, we sailed
got right in
2 days before the spring, and then, or 3 days before the 3-day sail. And then once they get there on the springs is when they pull the barge up to the beach, because then it's like, it's literally 30 meters from where the deck of the barge dropped down on the beach, little forklift, and everything just gets pumped out onto the beach. But when the tide goes out, that water is probably 900 meters to a K away from that beach. That's how far on a 7.5 meter tide that the water recedes away from the beach. So that's why they did time it. They didn't arrive on the high tide, but there was enough water for Tub to come and pick me up in a dinghy. He came and picked me up, and then I went back to the camp with him. The boys stayed on the barge, and we went to, back to the beach and just tidied a few things up. So I had Tub for a few days when I arrived there, and I had the barge. So that was great, hanging out with the boys. And then after a couple of days, they all buggered off. And generally when I get there, it takes me a few days to sort everything out, just to get comfortable so that for the rest of my stay there, I don't have to worry about boats or diggers or pumps or water or anything really. Like I just, the first few days I'm there, I tidy everything up, just get everything sorted so that the rest of my stay is fairly gentle. And I did that this year. And Scotty, I had a really unique experience. It was after Christmas. It was actually, so I was about 2 weeks in, so halfway into my stay, where it was pretty warm during the days. The tides were wrong for fishing. So on the spring tides, I generally don't go fishing, because what happens at the coastal camp is you've got water when the tide is at 2.5 meters, you've got water at the camp where you can get in a boat. But once it goes below 2.5 meters, it's mud. And then, like I say, the water goes out when it's low tide and the water's a K away. So on the spring tides, there's no water at the camp till about 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. Now, at that time of day, it's unbelievably hot, dead still. And then B, by 10, 11 o'clock, the sea breeze starts to kick up. And it's just from experience, I try to avoid being on the water when the sea breeze is blowing, just because it's not dangerous, it's just uncomfortable. You can't get up on this little, I'm only in a 4.5 meter boat, you can't get up on the boat and plane without slapping chop. Or I've just learned over the years, you just don't be out in the water at 10 or 11 o'clock when the sea breeze is blowing. It's just very uncomfortable. So I was just going through a patch there where, I not that I couldn't go fishing, it's just that it's just unfavorable and I didn't want to go fishing. And I actually got pretty miserable, Scotty.
Yeah.
I had a moment where I was very uncomfortable. I was very unhappy, and one afternoon I just got in the pool and I could see like Jupiter was out and another star, but it was also light. So it's that time of day that we call astronomical twilight. It's a transition between night and day where you can still see, but some of the stars are starting to come out. And man, I was just like arms open to the heavens, just like I'm done, like I'm finished, this is it. No more. I'm done with this experience. And it was very definitive. I woke up the next day. I was like, right, okay, this is it. I've got 2 more weeks left on this beach, and that's it. I'm probably never going to do this caretaking gig ever again, and I'm probably never going to guide out here ever again. And what proceeded to happen in the 2 weeks after that were two of the best weeks I've ever had out there, hands down. Look, I had storms every day, and not that I had storms at the camp, so it wasn't raining every day at the camp, but there were storms every day that I could see across the Gulf or behind me or on the other coast, which is perfect for shooting. When you're shooting storms, you don't actually want the storm on top of you. You can't shoot it when it's raining on top of you. You actually want it to be at a distance away from you, traveling alongside you or towards you, like ultimately towards you. So like the sunsets were just crazy. The storms were unbelievable. The weather was magic. Like it was beautiful sleeping at night, you know, just with a sheet and a fan. I had those 3 hours where it was brutally hot from 9 till 1, and then the sea breeze kicked in, and the afternoons were gorgeous. It did rain, lightning storms, some like just really, it's almost like I feel like I have a relationship with the land out there, and I feel like it was the graduation. Like I found, this is the, you know, when you need to start checking your sanity. When I found a butterfly, perfectly preserved. You know, like this gorgeous, gorgeous butterfly. And to me, the butterfly symbolizes metamorphosis, or it's like it's the shift from one part of you to another. It's metamorphosis, basically. But it was almost like a graduation. It was almost like, yep, you've done it. You've experienced it. I wouldn't say, it'd be cheeky to say I've experienced it entirely. You'd have to live out there for years to see everything. But, you know, I really had. I'd seen the whole ocean glowing from bioluminescence. I'd been trapped out on the water in the storm. I'd had some experiences where I'd been visited at nighttime by one of the spirits painted in the cave out there, Gillinger. She's a mermaid, or she's like the crazy haired woman that, she'd come to me a couple nights. Like, you know, awesome fishing. I'd been out there guiding. I was out there for an ex-cyclone, Ellie, last year, you know, like really crazy weather, like really... Really, that was the ultimate experience, being out there for that. But I was freezing cold. I was tucked up in the kitchen during that ex-tropical cyclone, Ellie. I was tucked up in the kitchen next to the oven, full crank with, like, this is in the middle of the wet season when it should be brutally hot. Like, full crank with a rug on, just on a camp chair, just trying to get warm. So anyway, yeah, I this butterfly really, to me, it symbolized that it was a graduation. It's like, yep, you've done it, you've passed, and you are a different human for being out here and experience. I've been going out there for 6 years, so I've been caretaking during the wet season out there for 6 years, and it has been absolutely phenomenal. And those last 2 weeks were incredibly emotional for me. There was actually one song that I just heard, I was listening to, and it come on, and it really triggered me to go out and stand out in this rock, and there was this crazy sunset, and it really, really triggered the tears which I needed. It's just like, and it was just so much gratitude for have had that experience out there. I guess it's hard to describe, but, you know, folks, there was tears running down my face. That's how I felt about being out there. And it was like that every day, not the tears, but just every day I would go out and sit on the rock and look out into the ocean, just like, wow, how lucky am I to have been coming out here since 2018, all the wonderful experiences I've had, the trials and tribulations. That's what... You know, I don't show on Instagram. I would love to be honest about that sort of stuff, but it's not all beer and Skittles. It's not all merry-go-rounds and fairy floss. And it's not for everyone. It's definitely not for everyone. I have had some horrible times on that beach. I've been on my knees begging, like, you know, make it stop, like just one thing after another going wrong. But those are the trials that I've endured and have lived through, and feel like I am a different human, a better man for having experienced it. Like I've driven road trains in the past. I drove road trains from a mine down south of Warman to Wyndham. I did that for 3 years, and things go wrong when you're operating machinery, and I am not a mechanically minded person, but I do pride myself on having common sense. And it was driving road trains that I learned that little things make big things stop. Like a tiny little air leak will make the whole road train, you know, 180 tons, and there's a tiny little air leak in a bit of plastic tubing that'll make the whole truck stop. And from that I learned, you know, that there's just tiny things that make things stop. And so you know, like from water leaks to generators playing up to the solar playing up, or running a pump, you know, 800 meters from a creek out the back to tanks and things not working. Just taking a moment and sorting it out, and just taking a breath and like, yes, I can fix this. And there hasn't been anything out there that has I've had to call for help or had to call someone to help fix it. You know, I've been able to get through all those little trials. But Scotty, one of the greatest trials I had this year, ever, was this year. It was on my last day there, and it was brutal. And I'm going to tell you all about it.
Absolutely.
So, this is fly out day. I've got the Mallard flying into the Osborne Islands. The Osborne Islands is 30 nautical miles away from the coastal camp. And the Mallard, which is the flying boat, was going to be at the Osborne Islands at 7 a.m. Now, those tides that I was talking about, I'd just come out of a neat tide cycle, and the first morning that I'm not going to have water at the camp was that morning. And so I was going to have water back at the camp at about 5 minutes past six. Now, I'd figured out just by going onto a boating app, and I traced a line from the camp out to the Osborne Islands, guessed where the plane was going to land, typed in the knots how fast the boat could go. I'd been out in the water, testing it, flat rip, right? I can do 25 knots, okay. Put that into the app, right. It's going to take you 55 minutes to get around to the Osborne Islands. I was like, holy moly. Like, if I get out, bang, on that tide, into the boat, flat rip, out to the Osborne Islands, I'll be at the plane when it lands. And then I thought, no, why? I mean, sorry, the tide going out, so I had water all night from midnight till 2 o'clock in the morning. What I thought was 2:45. So 2:45 in the morning, and then the tide was going out from 2:45, so no water, and then the tide come back in and I have water again at 5 minutes past six. So I decided that big rush of trying to get there, everything could have been perfect. I could have been there on time. I was like, no, why would you do that? Get in the boat at 2:45 and just go and see out in the water. And I had this vision of like, oh, maybe there'll be bioluminescence, which I hadn't seen for years, and I could play around in the tinny and the bioluminescence, because I had seen it out there 1 year, and I thought that someone had put lights on the boat, like that's how bright it was. And I thought, and it'll be lovely, I'll go sit out in the water at that time of morning, sun rising, sit there in gratitude, and really just like that last final send-off with the place, and just say, and just my... You know, my give my most heartfelt thanks to that part of the world for the experiences that I'd had over the years. That was the plan. I was like, right, alarm, 2 o'clock, get up. For some stupid reason, I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and I put the kettle on and I open the computer to like check weather and check tides. And for some stupid reason, I didn't walk 10 meters out to the dock to see where the water was. But what happens with tides and with apps is that it can be slightly out. And on this morning, it was slightly out. So at 20 to 6, man, this is bringing back some... And I haven't told anyone about this, which is great. It's great to speak about. At 20 to 6, I walk out to the water and I'm like, holy diner, like the boat's floating.
Yeah.
But only just.
Yeah.
Literally.
So you didn't go out at 2:45 like you said?
I didn't
You thought about that, but then you came
in. I got up at 2.
Yeah.
And I was going to go at 2:45. Yeah. But what I should have done at 2:20, put the kettle on and gone out and had a look at the water.
Yeah.
I should have. I do it all the time because you can go and look and you can see where the water is. You're like, right, I've got 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And the tide was slightly out. So when I went out at 22, so I wanted to be in the boat at 2:15, but I hadn't put all my stuff in it.
Mm.
I went out at 22 and I'm like, whoa, like it is going out. I've stuffed up basically.
Yeah.
The app is wrong. I've stuffed up and the boat is in about 6 inches of water, which is enough to get out. But I had to load all my stuff in, which I did in a mad panic. Loaded all my stuff in the, and this is 2:45 in the morning. It's pitch black, and I'm knee deep in water. So I had to get down off the dock. So I climbed, the dock is about 6-7 feet tall, and I had to climb down onto the ground. Then I'm in knee deep water with the boat, loading my stuff onto the boat. And when I went back up to the camp to put the dog on the chain, and when I come back down, I'm now like, the water's now like shin high, and I'm at the back of the boat trying to push it, and it's just on the mud, and I'm like really trying to push it out, and I got it out maybe 20 meters, and I'm like, oh man, that mud's just going to get deeper and worse.
Gone. Yeah.
And I'm like, done, I have stuffed this. And I was like, right, back to plan A. Back to leaving at 6:05 in the morning.
Yeah.
And so I went back up to the camp.
Because for those that don't realize, it's flat. So it comes down the slope and then it's flat. So if you've lost the water there, you've lost it for hundreds of meters.
Yeah. And that mud that I was in, which I was already in mud up to my knees. And see this, Scotty? Not that I'll just explain it to the viewers. I've got a lovely little cut, a big cut on my toe. Skin missing there. This is healed because it was for Tuesday, so today is Monday, it was Wednesday, so it was 5 days ago.
Yeah.
But in that mud is all the crab shell from that the mob have been eating up at the coastal camp.
Yeah.
Because I'd always wondered, they just throw their crab shells out, and then a couple of days later, like, oh, it's all gone.
Yeah.
Wow, how wonderful is the ocean? Just scoops it up, all that crab shell gone. I found that crab shell. It's in that mud that I was walking through. It was about two foot deep. So carved up my feet. But anyway, I go back up to the camp. I'm like, right, it's okay. It's gonna be fine. But man, holy moly, I'm getting anxious and sweaty just thinking about all of a sudden. I was just pacing. I was just doing laps and like on my apps and like, holy moly, like, okay, wow. Yes, you know, everything had to be perfect. And I was so stressed out about missing that plane. But what happened is, 5 minutes later, like a whoosh of wind. And this is like, you know, this is like 2:55 in the morning. It's like a real gust of wind. I'm like, whoa, what was that? And then I get onto my weather radar, and I could see some like light, fluffy stuff of rain. I'm like, well, that's nothing. But what happens is the coastal camp is on the edge of the Wyndham radar, so it doesn't pick up the rain that well. And it belted down.
Yeah, right.
It absolutely belted down. So I was beside myself. I was like, well, right now, if I was in the boat, there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah, you're getting pumped.
I would have been getting absolutely pumped out there on the water. Like pumped, like it was howling wind, and it was the first monsoonal rain that I'd had out there, and it was a cracker. And it rained for hour, you know, like I say, it's 2:55 in the morning. I've now got 3 hours before the water comes back, and it absolutely belted down. And by 5 o'clock, I'm, you know, the water's still a long way away, and I'm really the most anxious I've ever been in my life. I haven't got water, and it's absolutely belting down. It's windy, and I'm like, even if I was out there on the ocean, like, there's going to be like 2 or 3 foot swell, you know, like caps everywhere. I'm in a tiny little dinghy. I'm not going to be able to go anywhere. And I, it was, The interesting part was that I went out there for weather. That's how I ended up at the coastal camp, is I was chasing this storm, and I, you know, to be there that morning and to have this weather that I dreamed about arrive, you know, that's the whole reason I was out there, was for that weather. But on that morning, it's the last thing I needed. It's the absolute last thing I needed. And I knew what to do. I finally was honestly beside myself. The levels of anxiety and stress that I was experiencing were terrible. But what I did, Scotty, was I just sat down and you call it praying. A lot of people would call it praying. I have a different language for it. I have a different feeling for it. I call it magic. And I started, you know, I work with some beings, and I called them in, and I was like, you know, I started, and you know, there's hand movements and there's some breathing, and I don't know what it is. It just happens. It just comes out of me. But I've done it before, and it's magic. It really is. It's magic. And I was just like, you know, doing all this sort of stuff. And sure enough, 20 minutes later, sun started to appear over there, wind died down. By 10 to 6, it was cloudy, but there was no rain. There was no rain. And I was like, right, that water's getting close. I was like, I've got to give this a go. I've got to get it in that boat. I don't know what it's going to be like out there. I'm sure it's going to be sloppy. But I got in the tinny. Again, when I got in the tinny, it was in about 20 centimeters of water, or maybe 30 this time. You know, I was knee deep in mud and water again. It was, you know, it's not smart being in that part of the world, and that sort of, you know, that water, and that being that deep. But I got in the tinny, pushed myself out, got going, and just started pinning it. I started pinning it, and I was doing great until I got out into the open water. And there was the odd cat, you know, the swell was big, but I couldn't, I mean, I was on the plane, but I had to really back off, and I was just like, it is what it is. There's nothing I can do about this. I'm not going to, the benefit was it was a trailing sea, so I wasn't smashing into it. It was trailing. So folks, what that means is the waves were coming from behind me. So it was like, you know, if it's coming head on, when you go into a head on sea, you will smash into the oncoming waves, but the trailing sea is a lot more gentle. But I couldn't be full pin. But when it slowed me down. So the trip took like an hour and 20 instead of what was meant to be an hour or 55 minutes or something like that. But as I got into the Osborne Islands, it was beautiful and calm in there. I could see the mallard, so it hadn't landed yet, and it did a lap, and then it landed, and I was just full rip, full pin in this little tinny. Just it was raining as well. It had started raining, and so I was in shorts, no shirt, you know, completely saturated. All of my gear that I put in the boat at 2:45 in the morning was all saturated. Everything was saturated. But I got to the, you know, the mallard waited maybe like 10 minutes for me by the time I got there. After all of that, it was hard to believe what I went through that morning. And I think it's, you know, I've shared it here. But I think it's, you know, I was there. It was an experience that I hope to never be in again. But also just hard to believe, of like It's 2 o'clock in the morning. What is this storm doing here now? And it's, you know, of all mornings when I'm trying to leave, you know, it was a really, after the afternoon before that, the sunset that I saw was the craziest sunset I've ever seen in my life, hands down. Like unbelievable. Like if I had taken a photo, I would have had to desaturate, de-vibrance it, like to simmer it down. It was too much, you know. It was too much of a visual feast to set eyes upon. It was mind-blowing. And it was just like, wow, this place is I felt like I was really in tune. Like, it's really, there was this, you know, while that sunset was happening, there was a storm and shelf cloud, and it was just unbelievable. I really felt like the land was just like saying, you know, thank you for your time, thank you for nurturing us. But then the next morning, it just gave me that spanking of like, yeah, well, you know who's boss, it's me, by the way.
Yeah, it's a healthy respect that's required.
That's
in the North Kimberley Coast.
That's what it demands, is a healthy respect, yeah.
And the rawness of the elements and the remoteness and the vast, you know, just that terrain, isn't it?
Yeah.
Spending time in place like that. Who came? There was somebody else coming on the boat to take over, and then they took Tinny back or from the Osborne?
Yeah, so Tub and a carpenter flew in.
Yeah.
So they were...
So why'd they land then?
Why'd they land in the Osborne Islands? Good question.
Okay. Yeah.
It's the first time I'd ever been out there. Other times I'd flown on the Mallard, they'd said, you'll have to go to the Osborne, and then they'd ring up a day later and say, oh no, we're going to come to the camp.
Yeah, so maybe weather dependent? Or?
Well, I think it saves money. I think it's a lot cheaper because they've got to drop people off at the Pearl Farm.
Okay.
There's a Pearl Farm there.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, so it's not that leg, extra leg.
And that's what the Mallard is doing, is servicing the Pearl Farms.
Yeah.
There's one in the Osborne Islands and there's one in Koori Bay. And the one in the Osborne's is not, there's no physical structure, it's just a boat, but there's all the pearl strings.
Yeah.
Underwater, but yes, sorry, that's why the plane was landing there, and it was dropping off workers and picking up people who had been working, and I'm guess it's cheaper because it only has to stop once, it doesn't have to shut down, so for me to go out there.
Yeah.
So that's why I went to the Osborne that morning, yeah.
Did you, talking about being knee and waist deep in mud and water and whatnot at 3 a.m, did you have any crocodile encounters whilst you were out there for that 4 weeks?
Yeah. So The I had storms almost every day during those last 2 weeks. It was crazy. I had the best weather, definitely in Australia, potentially the world, if you're a storm chaser. And I'm stuck on a beach like a couple hundred meters long. Like storm chasers will drive for days if they know there's going to be weather in a certain area. I'm stuck on a beach 200 meters long, and I had a storm come to me, and then another storm. This isn't the same day. There was several days where I had 4 storms in one day, which is just mind-blowing. It's unbelievable. And so on this one afternoon, it was really late. The sun had been set for... The sun sets at 6 o'clock out there, 6 p.m. So the sun had been set for 15, 20 minutes. So it was like 6:20, 6:30. So, you know, still light. I didn't have a headlamp, but I'm walking down to my little spot on this beach where I can shoot the storm to get away from the infrastructure, and it's got a nice little foreground. And very, very, very complacent. I wasn't looking for, you know, you got to picture that it's that time of afternoon, evening where it's like the shadows are sort of hard to discern. There is no shadow really, because everything's in shadow because the sunset. And anyway, I'm walking down the beach and the dog comes screaming past me, like, you know, like he's chasing something. And about 20 meters in front of me, there's a little 2.5 meter croc laying on the beach, and Jonas, the dog, goes straight for it. And I'm like, whoa, dude, like, no, I couldn't grab him, he's a big dog. And the croc just turned and went into the water. Now, you know, a 2.5 meter croc is not a man-eating crocodile. But if it got a hold of you, it is going to ruin your day, afternoon, evening, week, life. You know, like if it got a hold of your arm, one twist and it's gone. And it's just, it was just another mind-boggling moment of being that close to a wild animal and it actually having a chance to attack you if it wasn't for the dog chasing it, you know? Like that Jonas, he did, he probably saved me that day. Sorry folks, the weather's just starting to settle in. I've been yarning for quite a little while there, Scotty.
Yeah, good.
It is good.
Just admire it for a minute.
Yeah,
and see what comes to it. But we had one of these brief intermissions at the beginning when we started because it just started pumping down, but this is just so beautiful. We're just exactly what Benny's saying. You have those days, those moments of admiration up in the coast. Experiencing that right now, to be sitting here in the backyard, and sitting here in the beautiful valley beside the river, and have this rain. Just wait so long for it. This is days we dream about for months and months at a time, when it's just perfect blue skies, and we're enjoying that side of life.
Yeah.
No rainbow without the rain.
Yeah.
It's something I've certainly took away from Benny's last story.
Yeah.
Of enduring that time, and as magic as it is, you've got to go through it regardless of where you are.
Absolutely. And folks, if you're listening to this this week, this weather is certainly for the week. If you ever want to see and experience the family, this is the time to do it. This is the time to come and do it. This is where it is at its utmost depth and divine. Absolutely.
We're going to take a little break. We'll pull it up there. We'll come back to you. Rightio, we've just come inside because it's just pumping. That rain has really kicked off, and it's really, really, really beautiful. But unfortunately, it's a bit too much for us to be sitting out there, and we're just going to wrap it up. We're just sitting out there yarning, hoping it's going to back off, but it's not, which is a wonderful thing. And it's time to also get out for a bit of drive and have a look around. The waterfalls are pumping all over the Ord Valley, in the mountains, and but thanks heaps, Benny, for sharing some of that, and we'd love to do it again and hear more about it. And I'm really stoked to hear about the wrap up about the coastal camp and what took place out there, and it's a really unique thing, spending so long on your own in the bush like that, isn't it?
It is, absolutely, yeah.
It really heightens things at times and really brings you that gratitude.
It's funny you say that, Scotty, because this time, actually, there was like daily lessons. I learnt so much about myself, like the good, bad, and the ugly, in that space out there. And that's what it's all about as well. It's not all about that actually, but that's what it was about this time. I just learnt so much about myself, like really valuable life lessons. But that's the end of that chapter, but as we were just saying, there's so much more out on that Kimberley coast, especially the west side there, flying in the Mallard from the Osborne Islands to Currie Bay, and that's just one small section of it. Folks, if you ever get the chance, never ever knock back an opportunity to spend some time on the Kimberley coast. And like we were saying before, if you're ever going to visit the Kimberley, or not just the Kimberley, Kununurra in particular, the East Kimberley, now is the time to do it. If you're listening to it, if you're listening to this, and you have the luxury of being able to, get up here because it is the best place on earth right now.
Oh yeah, and it's often referred to as the northern and the southern, particularly like in the Kimberley cruise calendars, where the boats go up as far as Big Ear Island, Process Creek, but it's Frederick Harbour, that sort of terrain, and then from there north around the Mitchell and into the Admiralty Gulf, and then around Londonderry into King George and Berkeley. But what Ben is saying, and what we're just talking about, is really getting to see more of that southern side of things. Benny was just saying he'd absolutely love to after spending all that time up on the North Coast, which is a real treat. And that's something my old man has a lot to do with. He's the KimberleyCruises.com website. You can check that out and you can see all the different boats and all the stuff. Little plug for him there and what they do to be able to see all the different boats that it does the coast like that. Southern and Northern, and it's this time of the year to be able to see the North with the George and the Berkeley and all of that sort of stuff pumping. And then they generally get going before Easter and then run right through to June, and then they get that southeasterly gets too much and majority of boats stay in that southern area and enjoy the Prince Regent and the Buckingham Archipelago and those places. So that's really cool. But yeah, really good to hear about the coastal camp, and we could have yarned for hours on this one, but it's not to be. We're to get out there and enjoy this weather and see some more of it, and we'll certainly do this again. But stoked you made it home alive.
Home alive. All the digits are still attached.
Yep. Yeah.
Sanity's in check, I think. I hope.
A few Wilson moments.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nah, really, really
good one,
cool.
Scotty. Thank you so much, brother. Really appreciate it.
Real pleasure, mate. And thank you to all listeners once again for listening. This is the 51st podcast that's going online, and this will go on right away. I'll put this straight up. I'm trying to get them up as consistent as I can in 2024, and I've got a new little setup, so just trying to get them, keep them moving, and we'll keep chatting. And this is the first time I've spoke to the same person, which is Benny, and done a second episode with him. So we'll just, like I said, we'll just keep catching up with different characters. And please leave reviews on Spotify, on Apple, whatever you're using, on Google, and any feedback's really cool to hear, just to give us an idea or questions, anything like that. And we'll keep more coming. Hope you enjoyed Lee Scott Virtue, the archaeologist, on the last one, and a bit of a yarn about the ultramarathon bushfire and that sort of stuff. And yeah, thank you everyone for tuning in. Check us out on Kimberley Spirit Instagram, and also Ben Brody Instagram and Facebook as well. And I'll put those links in the description and that sort of stuff. But happy new year to you all. And we really look forward to what this year's got in store. It's just an absolute ripper of a start. So bless you guys. Enjoy. Cheers.
Peace. You.
Cheers for tuning in to another episode. I trust you enjoyed it. To follow more of our journey, check us out on Instagram at KimberleySpirit or the website KimberleySpirit.com. Stay stoked and God bless.